This is Shirley Newton, instructing in the course Curriculum Development. I want to talk a little bit this morning about some excerpts from the book Humanizing the School, Curriculum Development and Theory by Ferry. We all realize that the schools have a common obligation to give all the children of all the people a good education. This is not a simple matter. The common intent of schools to do this is somewhat lacking. How, indeed, comes the question, is it possible to give all of the children of all of the people a good education? Then comes the thought, well, define it. What is a good education? How can a good education be effective for all? Well, we can see, first of all, that the school is these two things. It is a center for intellectual development, and it is also a center for youth development. The contention of Prairie in the book is that both go on in the same person, in the same school, at the same time. I'm going to repeat that. The contention of Prairie in this book is that both intellectual development and youth development go on in the same person, in the same school, at the same time. In the Soviet Union, the two happen in two different schools. They have schools for academics, and they have schools for socialization and exercise. Take science, for example. In this dimension, youth is both at home and lost in the modern world. Science will not merely develop the mind of the young person. Science will shake him up. It will, the way of inquiry, set youth at odds with provincial and ethnic cultural biases. Evolutionary teaching upsets Christians, and well it should. Science affects youth head on. Science causes emotional upheaval because that is the way things are. Science can wash its hands of unreasonable consequences. Education cannot. Science inducts students into the field of reality, but the conflicts that arise may bring the youth much emotional strain and mental anguish. Youth development is implicitly at the core of modern intellectual development. Schools should provide, then, the following things. These areas must be recognized by the school. Forums must exist in science classes and clubs where the subject matter is not science but the dilemmas, the emotions, the social issues posed by science. Secondly, modern youth, like modern man, must have respite from his encounter with baffling reality. He must play and run about, exercise. Perhaps as never before in history, modern man needs his games. And thirdly, the school must be prepared to assist in rationalizing the dilemmas and resolving some of the tensions that affect youth. A live curriculum in science will disturb the student even while it develops his intellect. That disturbance is real. It is a consequence of education and a concern for education. Thus, guidance and adjustment become implicit obligations. However, basically what we've been talking about, the emotional problems and the challenges or the conflicts that arise, do not arise at the preschool level. They usually arise later in life, for example, in the 4th and 5th and 6th grades and on up. We don't have to deal with that specific kind of a thing at the preschool level. But it's good, I think, that we realize that it is there. The moment that the school really does begin to develop the mind, it begins to affect the student's whole life. And even at the preschool level, this can happen. Now, at the preschool level, the things that are important are usually concepts. Let's talk about conceptual learning. It is both intellectual and emotional or affective. One does not usually forget what one learns as a concept. Conceptual learning doesn't diminish, nor does it wear out. What is a concept? A concept may be defined as an intellectualized and behavioral codification of meaningful experience. I'll run that by again. A concept may be defined as an intellectualized and behavioral codification of meaningful experience. Therefore, in order to develop the concept, an articulate generalization must be devised to state it. A factor analysis must be made. Its kinetic potential must be present and realized. Action is implicit in the concept. The experience must be internalized and personalized, and the action resulting must be willed and understood. Stated extremely, this view of learning might imply that the curriculum for human development is basically the same at all stages for the child and the adult alike. Curriculum for the mature person, which is life itself, is an extension of an intelligently conceived school program, not a supplement or a corrective, and certainly not a reversal of it. That is our assumption in this text. Now, in the kindergarten or preschool and in the seminar, students are learning the same thing throughout. It is a concept of formidable depth with a tremendous potential for action. Internalized and codified, it directs the child to wait his turn upon the slippery slide. The concept we're talking about is sharing. It directs the adolescent to teamwork, consideration, and cooperation. It directs the adult to philanthropy, social legislation, missions, and institutions of world order. It is a concept rich in unexplored dimensions of both understanding and action. It is derived from a great civilized insight and observation on the fundamental recognition of the brotherhood of man. So conceptual learning is both intellectual and emotional. For just a minute now, I want you to think back to your elementary school days. There are parts of your value standards, your moral conduct, your behavior, that were imparted to you as a concept in those elementary school days. I want you to think back on one particular thing that you feel is in your character today because of the teaching, because of the experience, because of the exposure to that particular concept in the curriculum in the elementary school. Now, I can give you an experience from my life. When I was in the seventh grade, I had a teacher who was very manners conscious. She was a Christian lady, and she enjoyed manners in children. And she often called it to our attention that we should be grateful. We should thank God. We should thank other people. And she said it in many different ways. Often when we would do something for her, she said, thank you. She set the example. Many times she would wait for us if we forgot, and she'd say, didn't you forget something? Then we'd say, oh, yes, thank you. Then she would read to us from the Bible about thanking God. Then she would tell us about people who were grateful. And she said, it doesn't cost anything to say thank you, but it sure does a lot of people a lot of good. And she implanted this desire for thank you in my being, so that to me it was very important to say thank you to people. People liked you when you said thank you. You felt good when you said thank you. Thank you is important. It's a social grace. It's also something that is very pleasing to hear. It becomes a part of the personality. So from that time on, thank you became a part of me. I became very mannerly in high school. I was noted as an unusual student because of the manners that I possessed. When some of the others did not receive the same conceptual training in elementary school, and it was not emphasized to them that it was so very important to say thank you, or yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, all these different things. And so it became a part of my personality. It's one thing I will never forget. It's just as real to me today, her teaching about thank you, as it was back in the seventh and eighth grade. So that was a concept that she got across to me. And it was an important one and has played a big part in my life. People have appreciated me because I have appreciated them. I think think the big thing for us to consider and to decide upon at this point is what particular concepts do we want to implement into our nursery school, preschool, daycare, center programs. There are some things that we have to decide that we're going to put into the curriculum. We're going to make provision for. Things that we feel that preschoolers need to learn at the start before they move up to an even greater social situation in the elementary school. So what are some of the concepts? Not just secular concepts I am talking about now, but I mean Christian concepts. What are some of the Christian concepts that you feel are necessary to teach a preschooler? We will now take time out to discuss these. In most cases in the curriculum, the teaching of concepts, the implementation of concepts, is a subtle kind of thing. We work it into the curriculum. We don't call, for example, the subject area in the curriculum social graces. But as we study about who we are, why God made us, how to get along with other people in the community, and so on, these things can be worked into the format of the curriculum very subtly. In practical experience, in discussion, and so on. So, the teaching of concepts is not always something that is seen written down on paper. Sometimes it is something that is enacted by the teacher and the student without actually being mentioned. It just works its way into the curriculum because the curriculum at that point, the subject area of the curriculum at that point, lends itself in that particular direction. Right now, for example, we have all the children lined up outside or to come inside to the preschool situation or inside to go outside, however. All of a sudden, four or five of the children fall down flat on their faces. What are we going to do about that? Are we just going to pick them up and not mention it? Or are we going to take this opportunity to work in the teaching of a concept? We could say, well, what happened here? Did somebody shake his finger and make all the little men fall over? What happened? Somebody pushed. Oh, is that the way we learn how to get along with other boys and girls? By pushing them down and hurting them? I don't think so. How do you think that we should behave? Oh, maybe there was an argument. Somebody's not happy with your place in the line. Well, we could put you somewhere else. But we all need to know that it's not fair and it's not right to push. You push somebody, remember, they could push you back. Tit for tat, is that the way we do? What does the Bible say? What does the Bible teach us about pushing? The Bible teaches us to be kind to one another. Do you think that pushing is kind? I don't think so. I wouldn't want somebody to be kind to me if pushing was being kind. And then you talk about it. You may use your own approach. But you see, you're just capitalizing on a concept. A situation has arisen, and so you have to handle it. It's not on paper as part of the planned curriculum, but it's there, isn't it? It is the curriculum, because curriculum is not only planned experiences, but unplanned experiences that happen. And the teacher has to be alert and aware to teach at times like this so that children can get the concept of what they should do and should not do. Or get the idea that one mode of behavior is preferred above another in society. Now that I have mentioned that particular example, I want you to stop the recording at this point, and I want you to think of a situation that you have observed at the preschool level where you could teach the children a concept.